He is Curt Browning. And 32 years ago today, on March the 25th, 1988, at the World Championships in Budapest, he landed a quadruple jump, the first ever to stick a quad toe loop. It was a historic day in figure skating. Can't believe it was that long ago. Curt is good enough to take some time this morning to join us. Mr. Browning, how are you today?
Good. 32 years.
So how does that feel?
Well, you
can you believe it?
It was easier than a 5-10 split, I'll tell you.
There you go. I wanted to ask you this because you come up with the concept. You're landing doubles, you're landing triples. Are you the one who comes up, I got to land a quad? Is it your coach? Is it somebody else in your life? Like, you're trying to push, right? You're trying to take that next step in your sport. You're trying to create something. Set yourself apart. Be unique. How does the concept of trying to stick a quadruple jump of any kind first come up?
Mimicking. You remember South Park when What Would Brian Boitano Do?
Yes.
Well, Brian Boitano was doing a quad, and I saw him do it in an outdoor rink in Europe, and it looked easy. He's obviously one of the best skaters that ever skated. He won the Olympic Games in Calgary. And he's got thighs as big as my chest, and he's did this quad. So I went home and to Edmonton, and I thought, well, that didn't look that hard. But I didn't want to embarrass myself, so I actually started practicing it at the rink alone. So at the end of the night, I literally would turn the lights back on at the Royal Glenora Club and go out by myself and try this thing. Because I didn't want to be teased. And who do you think you are trying a quad? So I started doing it by myself. And then one day I just went, hey, coach, watch this. So I have this new trick. And that's how that started.
We're with Curt Browning on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So as you're practicing this, Curt, like, I'm envisioning the ski jumpers, right, at the Olympics. They will land on padding. In some cases, they will land in water as they practice this, right? I mean, they've got soft landings. You're practicing this on ice. I would imagine there was a slip up or two as you were learning this particular move, and landing on your tailbone on hard ice can't be that pleasant. What was the experience of practicing this move like?
After that question, anticlimactic, because it was very smooth, to be honest. The double axle, my tailbone was a mess, and I had trouble walking. I couldn't sit. The simple double axle when I was 14 did exactly what you said. It really was painful. The quad wasn't. I think, like anything, if you build a really good foundation, then the next step is a lot easier. And I think the triple that I had at the age of 18 or 19 or whatever it was big, and there was lots of room to put in the extra rotation. And that seems to be what the athletes are doing now. They just have deciphered that 4-revolution timing. And of course, in my sport now, the quad is actually quite common. But back then, it was exciting because, number one, nobody had done it. But every time you did do it, the gossip went around, and the claps and the acknowledgement afterwards. I have to tell you, it was pretty cool for a young guy to be one of the only kids in town with that trick.
Who else did you train with at the time that you were, through the, I guess, mid to late 80s? Was there any other coach or any other figure skaters, I guess, you kind of looked up to and, you know, you could kind of collaborate with to, you know, that next move or how to get to that next level?
I think who you like tennis. If you play tennis with somebody who's worse than you, you come down to their level, and the other guy comes up to yours. So you meet middle ground. So I think who you train with is really important. And I was lucky that I had one of my best friends, and he still is. We were texting yesterday, Michael Slipchuk, who now runs the high level, the level, what's it called, stream for Skate Canada. So he stayed in the sport as well, and he could do the quad as well. And did in competition, and he used it to beat Elvis Stoiko for the Canadian title one year. So it's important to have people. And of course, I had Viktor Petrenko training on the edge of the Black Sea in the Ukraine. And somehow he was always with me, just because, you know, he was the scary guy I had to try and beat to win.
Curt Browning is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It was 32 years ago today that he landed a quadruple jump, the landing the quad toe loop at the 1988 World Championships in Budapest, and he became the first to land a quad jump at the World Championships competition. So, Kurt, as a little kid, when do you get into figure skating, and when do you sense that you have an aptitude for it such that you could compete at the highest level as you grew older and into adulthood?
That's the right question to ask somebody who coaches, and I do work with lots of kids, but I don't have any students of my own, so I'm going to guess real early. And I think what happens is that you get on the ice, and some kids can just do it. They just move across the ice naturally. It's kind of like they just think, this is fun. This isn't scary. This is fun. And then the next step is jumping. Do they have the aptitude to get up in the air and turn? And that's probably why I stayed in the sport. I just loved getting up speed and throwing yourself across the ice. And then the sport is strange because we have to put on a costume, we have to choose music, and we have to do choreography to it. So you really need that showmanship aspect of the sport as well, or you do get kind of left behind. So it's a very particular sport, and not a sport that everybody can fall into easily. And I think, you know, I feel like the sport picks you as much as you pick it.
For those of us who are lay people with regard to this, what does a team look like? It's not just you, it's not just your coach, but in terms of picking a costume, picking a song that you can flow to and move to out there on the ice, the choreography, how does that all come together? How many people does that typically involve?
What a cool question. It's a great question because you watch figure skating, you don't think the word team. I mean, you know, sometimes there's two of us on the ice, but you don't think the word team. And as a young guy, I always thought I was the race car and I had this team around me. You know, my parents funded the race car. My coach, taught, you know, the driver, or my coach was the driver. And of course, the choreographer was the person who designed the fins and the wheels, and then the costume designer made it look great. That's how I pictured myself, and I allowed my team to influence my decisions. And in my sport, for example, we mentioned Brian Boitano and, of course, Brian Orscher, the Canadian. Brian and Brian in '88 had that great battle. Both of them chose military-themed programs. And Sandra Bezic, this very famous and still work with her to this day choreographer, made decisions for Brian Boitano that I think basically allowed him to beat Brian Orscher. And I think it was the choreographer that put him over the top. So having the right team around you is always, always super important, especially when you're at that finite level of any sport. I mean, who else can teach you the 5-10 split, right?
Mm-hmm. Can you take us through a typical training day? Like, I'm sure you don't get on the ice for 20 minutes, practice the quad, and then get off. I'm sure it's a little bit more to it than that. What's your typical, I guess, your tough training day getting ready for a competition, or, you know, when you're, what would be a typical tough day, what, 2-3 months out?
I laughed because I was thinking that back when I was a kid in Edmonton, and, you know, if the coach wasn't around, if you went on the ice and 20 minutes later landed the quad, yeah, let's go to Earl's, get some wings. it did happen. But I think that for me, I didn't do off-ice training. And I, you know, you hear stories about the NHL, you know, as soon as you finished the game, you went back to your job because the NHL guys didn't get paid enough and it was very casual. I think it was way more casual in my day. Off-ice training was getting on my bike and riding 8 miles to the rink or going to the park and throwing the football with my friend. Yeah, or rollerblading, you know, like everything that I did for fun was physical. And then on the ice, I skated 2 45-minute sessions. And back then we did figures, which was, not to get too long on you, but figure skating is called figure skating because of those figure eights we used to do. Now, of course, they've been, you know, voted off and they're not on the island anymore. But I would have to do 2 or 3 patches, we called them. And so it was about 5 hours on the ice every day. 5 days a week. And so that's what I did. Nowadays, the skaters do a lot of off-ice. They do a lot of warm-up. The warm-up that they do nowadays looks awful like a really heavy workout to me. And then they skate. They skate 3 times, and they have specialty sessions for just footwork, programming, and spinning. And of course, they're doing quads multiple with triple axle, triple toes, and all that stuff. So it's they're a much more finely tuned machine, if we can go back to the reference of this race car, than we were in my generation. But then again, it was a little bit more fun because it was all kind of wild, wild west and reckless back then as well.
Kurt Browning is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. This may seem like a silly question, but I ask it because I feel like perhaps I could relate. Ziggy loves to laugh at me. I'm Kurt, a little neurotic. So if the internet is down and I don't have access to some of the screens that I like, the tabs on my computer that I like to look at during the show, Ziggy can tell that I'm a little off, right? And loves to sort of give me the crap for that. When you're on the ice, are there, I don't say actual markers, but sort of visual markers that you have such that if you're doing that figure eight and you're a little too close to the boards or you're a little too close to the center of the ice and you recognize that in a moment, can that stuff seep into your head or do you have that ability to just let it all go, trust your instincts, trust your gut. I've got my program down. There's nothing to worry about here. Were you able to shelve that, or are there little intricacies that we may not think of in a program that can affect you?
Were you a figure skater in another life?
Well, I might have been. I just know how. You know what I am in this life? I'm neurotic. So I'm assuming that, you know, with your passion, you might be. Two.
A little bit. But on the ice, I was more inspired by the potential of the win or a pretty girl that I thought had her eye on me. And if I landed this quad, she might be interested. It was those kind of aspects, the audience, the thrill of it. That's what motivated me. And markers in the rink, that would have been handy. But I wasn't really that kind of guy. But there is Patrick Chan, who, of course, three-time world champion and one of Canada's greatest skaters, was like that exactly. And if he didn't get 17 inches close to the boards and come in at 18 miles per hour exactly and pick, you know, like everything was absolutely calculated. Mm. And so when it went wrong, it went, you know, like, you know, when you swing hard, the golf ball goes way off into the next fairway. Yeah, because he was committed to needing those check marks, those markers, as you said it. I will tell you quickly, at the Olympics, I wasn't used to training on such a wide piece of ice. And of course, at the Glenora or here in Toronto, when I was training, my rink was skinnier. So the marker of the back outside edge as we glide into that big triple axel was center ice for me. And at the Olympics, I would get as close to the boards as I usually did and then wait for that marker, which was the big logo of the Olympics at the middle of the ice, which was too far away, you know, a few extra seconds on that back outside edge, which took me farther around the corner and my axle takeoff would swing. And I'd go back to the coach, Michael Uranek, and be like, why are you jumping so late? I'm jumping in the middle of the ice. And I went, how many times do I have to tell you this rink is wider? So yes, it did screw me up actually a little bit.
Kurt, a really interesting conversation this morning. We really appreciate it. Thank you. And we hope we can have you on again.
Well, it's too bad that, you know, COVID took away the world championships along with everything else.
Right.
You know, we all know that those athletes that are training for the Olympics this summer and all that stuff, you know, it pales in comparison with the health of the planet. But since this isn't fan, we can dwell on it and it sucks. But hopefully our sports will come back. It was kind of fun to help you guys get through the day in 23 years. You know, we'll see you in another few years when it's 50.
Thank you, Kurt. Awesome stuff.